You are listening to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 84, Back on the Chain Gang. And welcome to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 84. I am Paul French, and today I am Giddy Boy. That's right. That's right. Because in 2 days, as you were listening to this, if you were listening to this at the right number of days before what I'm talking about, in just two days, as this episode is released, new Legion of Superheroes number one.
And
I think that not only, you know, being giddy about it, but I think also the folks at my comic shop are going to plot, because it's the first time I've ever said, get me the variant cover too.
Ooh, them fighting words.
Yeah, that never happens. Like, in fact, I'm usually the guy who's like, variant covers. Puh.
Yeah,
I'm not a big fish tosh.
Not Tish Tosh.
And so we
bought variant covers when they were ape variant covers. I got the one for Agents of Atlas with Gorilla Man doing the disco of the Saturday Night Fever on the front.
Cool.
That's awesome.
So there we go.
Goodness gracious. Is that you? Okay.
That's me.
That's you. And I am Darren Noel, and I am, oh crap, I don't have a Legion name right now. I guess I'm Laundry Man because I just put a load of pants in the washer because I need pants to go to work tomorrow.
Of course, you mean Laundry Lad. If you
Laundry Lad, I'm yes, sorry.
You're gonna qualify for
promotion all the way through puberty. Look at that! Wow,
he's in the adult legion.
Yeah, the adult legion
of Super Seven podcasters. I don't think we're quite there yet.
No, sir.
Spoilers.
Spoilers for Laundry Lad. Anyway.
I'm Matt Kramer, and I'll be convention kid again because this weekend is the Summit City Comic Con.
Nice.
Yay!
Looks to be a lot of fun.
Con season is upon us.
Yay.
Yeah. Your wife invited me along, but I just can't get on there. So.
Yeah, your flight rings in the shop.
I know. But. That's Scott Colden tonight. I am going to apologize, lad. Because chances are I'm still watching The Wire, and chances are I'm still going to keep mentioning The Wire because it is so awesome.
You don't need to apologize.
Exactly.
I was just thinking back to the last episode, and I was like, man, I think I talked about The Wire a lot and like mentioned The Wire a lot, and I should really stop doing that. And I thought, no, I can't do that. So no. I'll have to apologize.
The Wire is awesomeness, and you know that there's going to be other people listening to the show who have watched it, and they're digging The Wire too. So
it's better to ask forgiveness than permission. So
there you go.
You're here.
I'm going to talk
here.
There you go.
I totally live by that motto.
Ah, yes. So Legion news. Yeah, we already told you the Legion news.
That's all
2 days from now.
Need.
Pick up that book because it's gonna be awesome.
Pick up two.
Yeah, so that's gonna be very, very cool. So, all right. So, hey everybody, it's Paul, and we're gonna take a quick break from the proceedings here. I know you just heard me a second ago, and now I sound completely different. That's because it's a different time. Time travel, it goes crazy with stuff. So I know we left you with a cliffhanger, and I know poor Glenn Quagmire sitting at the DMV listening to the show, left with a cliffhanger. Unconscionable of us, but waiting just a little bit more is going to be totally worth it, because our own Matt Kramer managed to meet up at Challengers Comics last week with the artist of The Return of Bruce Wayne. That's right, Mr. Chris Sprouse. Of course, we talked about some of his early Legion work when we went and did the origin story way back when we were covering the 5 Year Later Legion, and now he's going to talk about a whole lot more. So take it away, Matt.
Hi, this is Matt, and I'm here at Challengers Comics in Chicago with Chris Sprouse. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to me today. And I'd like to start out talking a little bit about the Legion with you. And hard to believe it's been 18 years ago, you said?
Yeah.
Wow. And some of your first professional work was with the Legion, wasn't it?
I believe it was my second job, maybe third job ever for DC, was Chemical King origin story for Secret Origins 42, I believe.
Wow.
Still know some of the details, but not all. I think it was like a 13-page story or something.
Yeah, in the Dead Legionnaires issue.
Yep, that's exactly right.
And were you a Legion fan growing
yes.
up?
My first Legion was the Mike Grell Legion.
Wow.
And I don't remember the issue number, but I remember the cover was sort of a downshot looking at one of the space cruisers and a giant brown lizard creature trying to eat it. And I don't remember what... That's my impression now from not having seen it in several years. That was what was on the cover, but it was one of those right in the middle of the Grell run. And I followed it off and on, but what really caught me was when I was really getting into comics, it was the Giffen years.
Mm.
And I jumped on board that and read that religiously and followed it until I got into comics professionally and started drawing the book.
And what were some of your favorite characters?
Probably, I have a feeling these people were a lot of people's favorites, but since I got into the Mike Grell years and the Keith Giffen stuff, they did a lot of stories of Wildfire and Dawnstar, mm-hmm. and those are always my favorites. I also like Brainiac.
Oh, yeah.
But when I drew the book, those were not... Well, I didn't get to draw Wildfire, but the three originals ended up being my favorite when I drew the book. They were always the most fun, and I related most to them somehow. You know, I was able to comfortably draw them better than the other characters. I don't know why that was, because I didn't have much feeling for them when I read them.
Yeah. Growing up, I never had much feeling for the three original ones either, but lately Cosmic Boys just got to be one of my favorites, and can't really explain why, but it's just happened.
Yeah, I did like, I remember, yeah, Giffen did a solo, Giffen Levitz, I should say, I should give him all the credit, but they did that solo Cosmic Boys series, or issue,
mm-hmm.
it took place on their planet, it was sports related stuff with the Cosmic Boy and his brother, I believe.
But, yep.
That stuck out, but even then, I was still into Wildfire back then.
And what were some of your favorite stories?
To read or draw?
Either or.
To
both.
Read.
Both.
I liked the stuff immediately after the Great Darkness Saga. Mm-hmm. I liked the Great Darkness Saga because I was always a New Gods fan. But I thought the stories right after that were a lot of fun and really good. And the Legion was just firing on all cylinders, and mm-hmm. it was a lot of fun to be into it then. And it seemed like, you know, I don't know what it was, but Keith was doing some really nice stuff with the backgrounds and the technology of the Legion that I liked quite a bit.
Right.
To draw, I would say probably the first two issues were my favorite to work on, of Legionnaires. And I did quite like, we did, I don't know, about eight pages in the back of Legion of Super Heroes 51 that introduced the Legionnaires,
mm-hmm.
and that I remember enjoying quite a bit. That was the first time Carl Story had inked me, and that was cool because, I mean, he's an amazing inker, and it's the first time I saw his inks on my work.
He's been with you for a while. Story.
Yeah. And that was a highlight of my career, one of the highlights of my career.
And speaking of the Legionnaires, one of your legacies in the book is the costumes and the designs and the characters. And were the new costumes your idea, or how much input did you have in them?
We actually met in New York, and they assigned... It was at a time when Jason Pearson was also drawing the
mm-hmm.
book, and I think it was right before Stuart Immonen started drawing it. So it was the end of Jason's run. He was doing the regular book, and I was getting ready to draw Legionnaires, and they said, go home and design some costumes. Jason, you design some characters, and do something different. So I went home, and it was like the only thing I could think to do was... one of the problems with the Legion, and one of the problems a lot of people had, was they couldn't tell they were a team. And I just racked my brains trying to think of ways to make them a team, and I just thought of something simple. Maybe they could keep their individuality, but it was like, okay, belt buckle. You know, just everybody, they have their fight ring, but nobody can see that in a tiny little panel. Maybe the belt buckle. And sometime after that, the stripe theme, where everybody had a more or less uniform look to them, because there was one solid color stripe and then down the middle of the costume and then something on the outside, and I tried to give everybody their own unique color so you could tell them apart from behind, from the side, any angle. It was easy to get a grip on who was who, and in a, you know, a huge group scene, you didn't have to play Where's Waldo. You could pick out people by their colors and stuff. So that was my idea, but it was based on like a mandate to come up with something different that we hadn't seen in the Legion yet. And my thing with that was uniformity. Like, the Legion was so varied. You had crazy, you know, the crazy sexy Mike Grell costumes, and then you had Superboy, you know, just right. Like, this weird right. Mishmash of costumes. And my goal was to just make it look like a team.
And was it your idea to put the tooth on Mad Reader Lad's costume?
I don't think so. That sounds like a Michael Urie thing, but it could also have been Tom and Mary Bierbaum. And I say that because they were very whimsical, yes. Michael Urie especially.
They love Mad Reader Lad.
I think with Mad Reader Lad, I'd probably just give him a green and black costume. You know, sort of the way Brainiac mm-hmm. just had no symbols or anything. Just they suggested the tooth, and it sounded goofy, but it worked.
And one of the other things I really liked was that probably something that hadn't been done since before Mike Grell came on the book is that the kids were actually drawn to look like kids.
I tried. I actually, you know, looking back, it looks weird, but at the time, you know, I remember that being a big deal for people. Like, I remember hearing a lot of people saying that. I got just as many people saying they looked too young, but it's like I'd always do a lot of research, and one of the things I did was I just gathered up boatloads of pictures of, you know, teens and early 20s, you know, people to have all around me while I was working, so I didn't get somebody's head too big or something. Right. And I failed quite a bit, but that was what I was going for, so I'm glad you think it worked. I hope other people do.
I'm sure they did. But the first time I became aware of your work was that Batman Annual. I'm sure you hear about that a lot.
I was just talking about it 10 minutes ago.
That's one of the few comics that I can actually remember where I was when I bought it, and I just read it over and over and over again. That was right around the time I first started reading Batman after the movie had come out. I picked it up around issue, I think, like 450 or something. And then I picked up that annual just one afternoon because we were going to the state fair. And I just read it in the car over and over again. And the sequences that have really stuck with me over the years were the other ones where he's flipping the coin and it's going from panel to panel.
Yeah.
And I just had never seen anything like that before.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. That was basically, it's like that. I'm pretty sure that was scripted, but that's one of those things when I get a script, I see images in my head, and that's one of the images that I liked most about that book was that image of that coin flipping. So I'm, thanks. That makes me feel good that I was able to get what I saw and what appealed to me out of the script, and I was able to translate that, get that out on the page. That's a weird one for me. I did that immediately after that Legion story we were just talking about, and I feel like I was still too new to do it justice, so I have mixed feelings about that story. I know it was the best I could do at the time, but I just look at it and go, man, I could do that so much better now. But it's interesting. A lot of people, I've signed so many of those. That connected with a lot of people. I'm surprised.
Yeah. And back then, I had no idea it was set during or right after year one or any of that, because that was really about the first Batman I consistently read since getting some of my uncle's
Me
old
too.
Books.
Yeah.
And that was 60s stuff, which is definitely not that Batman.
And that wasn't the Batman. I only knew Batman from the TV show. We were Marvel and DC snobs, as in my brother and I only collected Marvel stuff, with the exception of sci-fi comics. I remember he got I think there's something called Star Hunters, and he got a few science fiction stuff, titles that DC put out, and he got Warlord.
Oh,
and I collected the Legion. And if they ever did Star Trek books or anything, any adaptations, I got those. But we didn't collect DC superhero books for the most part. Even though, I know, Legion of Superheroes is a superhero, but for me, it was science fiction.
Yeah.
That was
set in space.
Drawn for me. Yeah.
All sorts of weird aliens.
But, we never read, Batman because the comics just, we were poisoned by the TV show. We had grown up watching the TV show, and Batman just seemed stupid. I hate to say this, but that was my introduction to Batman. And when you're a little kid,
you're not
smart enough to know that this is just a 3-year period of Batman's history or something. And it doesn't mean the comics are like this.
Yeah, until the movie. I mean, that's pretty much the impression I had sitting there after school watching reruns.
Yeah.
Like, then the movie definitely changed my impressions of it.
But, a lot of that was, I guess that was like what a lot of people describe the Neil Adams Batman years for them. Bad sentence. Must have been like that for me, at least. The same way it was for the people who encountered the Neil Adams Batman stuff, where it was like, wow, that's Batman done right for a change. It was that and the cartoon, the animated series,
I
think. It's Batman done absolutely right for the most part. A lot of times he was still, you know, kind of superhero-y and light and stuff, but I like the dark, like I was talking about this earlier, the opening scene in the first Batman movie where the criminals are running around on rooftops and you can barely see Batman for most of it, and he's just a shadowy, dark figure. I thought that was perfect for the character.
And over your career, you've had the opportunity to work with a lot of great writers, like Denny O'Neill and now Grant Morrison. But I'm sure the biggest question that people ask you is, what was it like working with Alan Moore?
That is the question I'm asked most often. And, you know, I can't lie to you. It was definitely the highlight of my career so far. Mm-hmm. That was so much fun. And he tailored the ABC books to the artists. You know, you're never going to get better than that, sort of creating your own book. I mean, to have someone like Alan write a book that, you know, he's written with you in mind. And I'm not talking about egotistically. Mm-hmm. It was a perfect match. Mm-hmm. Everything he wrote, from just briefly talking to me a few times, was kind of everything I ever wanted to draw. It was there in the scripts, and it was just a joy to work on.
I couldn't think of anyone other than you drawing Millennium City.
Wow. Well, thank you.
Because, I mean, sure, it's your detail and design sense, and it's just very cool.
I know, it's hard for me because I thought it would be fun at first having other people draw Tom Strong, but sometimes it's painful, like, not that they did a bad job.
It's just, your baby.
It's I wish I could have drawn that.
Right, right.
Again, I thought they got great artists to work on issues that I didn't do, but it was always frustrating for me because I wish I could have done it. So it was hard. I felt that connection with the characters. I really wish I could have done that story or that scene or something. Hmm.
And what's your process for breaking down a script? Now, you were talking about that you could have drawn other scenes.
Usually I sit down one day with a script, I read through it, and I usually get images immediately. And my memory's not so bad that I can't remember them. I read the whole script, I get out my layout paper, and I start chronologically from page one, just doing rough thumbnails, breaking down the scene. Sometimes when I'm reading the script, I will go in and draw on the edge of the page or something like that. But I just start with that. I just respond to the script. Start trying to get down on the page what's in my head as far as panel layouts and position of people go. I do it really loosely and quickly, and then I go straight to relatively loose layouts compared to my pencils, but they're still pretty tight. Everything's there, and I take that, put it on a light box, and trace it from there, and that's the final page, traced on Bristol board over the layouts based on the thumbnails.
Very cool. And are there any other writers out there nowadays that you'd like to work with?
Anybody, you know, as long as it's a good story. I've been really lucky to work with really great writers. I've never, you know, I don't have this feeling like, oh, I can only work with this guy or that guy. I've had some, you know, and they don't have to all be British, too. That's something else somebody asked me, you know, why am I always working with these English guys? And it's like, I don't know. You know, it's great, though. They write good stories. But I've also worked with a lot of American guys recently that I really liked. I loved working on Number of the Beast with Scott Beatty. That was so much fun. Mm. And, gosh, I'm trying to think of Garth Ennis, Irishman, I guess. That was Midnighter right before that. But, no, I can't think of a writer where I've done a story where I've actually just not liked the writer or the writing. I've been very fortunate. I don't think I've ever drawn anything that I'd consider was a turkey story.
Well, right now you've got the Batman, the Return of Bruce Wayne, and we know Batman is now stuck in different eras. And if you had to be stuck in any era, what would you like to be stuck in?
This is bizarre. You know, my wife and I are nerds enough that this is the kind of thing we talk about occasionally. And frankly, I am the future, basically. Wow. Like right now or the future. Like I don't want to go live in the past. There's no period that I was really into, and I just enjoy my modern conveniences too much, my showers and my air conditioning and stuff like that. So yeah. I am drawn to, I think as far as work goes, not me personally, but I've found myself becoming more and more fascinated with sort of Western stuff because I've been offered jobs drawing this kind of stuff, and it's stuff I never thought I would do, but I enjoy drawing that. I think I wouldn't have minded so much, you know, anywhere from the 1930s on, I think I would have felt comfortable, but I like today. You know, I like living here now, and but I am curious. I would love to, you know, as everybody would, have a flying car and all that stupid jets and stuff. But,
your own flight ring.
Yeah, I mean, just seeing how much technology has changed since I got into comics, I would love to find out what it's going to be 50 years from now.
Right.
I'm still around for that, but so I'd be more looking ahead than looking back to the time period. I would like to live in.
Very cool. And you also have a new Tom Strong series coming out with Peter Hogan.
Yes.
And what's it like working on Tom Strong without Alan Moore?
Strangely, this series, the script for the series just feels so much like Tom Strong should that I won't say I don't miss Alan. I love working on his scripts, but it feels right. It feels like Tom Strong, so it's perfect. It just feels very comfortable, and I'm very at home doing it. There was no big adjustment getting back into it. It was actually tons of fun because I'd just gone from working really hard on Number of the Beast and almost killing myself on that to, figuratively, by the way, just no other story there, but to working on something that was an absolute blast and easy. You know, Tom Strong, for me, I don't have to look up reference for any characters. I know exactly what they're going to look like, exactly what they're going to do, and just feel perfectly at home drawing them. So it's just completely pleasant drawing that book.
Very cool. And do you have anything else coming up after that you can talk about at all?
Hopefully. I hope I'm not giving too much away, but they have approved another Tom Strong miniseries.
Very cool.
I'm assuming with the in parentheses, if this one does well, we'll see another Tom Strong miniseries.
Very cool.
The script is underway. And there was talk of me recently doing some Superman stuff, but I don't know if that's going to happen. That gets brought up every couple of years, maybe. and there's talk of me doing something with Jeff Johns that was more creator-owned.
We'll see
if that happens. But the only thing I know for sure is more Tom Strong.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to that. And thank you for taking the time out to talk to me.
You're welcome.
And enjoy Chicago.
Thank you. I am.
And with that, we left everyone on a cliffhanger last week.
Cliffhanger.
That's right. We had Legionnaires in prison.
that never happens.
And they were all putting their hands. We had some Legionnaires in prison, others in the sewer. I think says it all.
Having a good.
They're having a rough day, and they were talking about the running water straight from the World Purification Center. That seems odd that they would put such
That's
a point
not
on
relevant
that.
Relevant at all?
Yes, exactly.
what? Spoilers. I haven't read this yet.
I didn't understand a word of that.
Thanks.
Uh-oh. Is he breaking up, Captain?
he's sounding a little unstuck in time.
Oh, no. And Nosebleed.
So I'll lead us through this one. This is from Adventure Comics number 360 from September of 1967.
Woo-hoo!
And the cover penciler is Kurt Swan. The inker of said cover is George Klein. They are also the artists on the interiors, but the writing and layouts are done by Mr. Jim Shooter. So.
Shooter.
Oh, yeah. So on the cover, we have, these feral-looking dudes. And they're under the sun, and you've got the Legionnaires carrying their jewels in big baskets. And wait, what?
Yeah.
Hey now.
Please, come on.
And we got Ultra Boy making big rocks into little rocks, and these guys are whipping them and saying. And one of the guys says, "Move faster, Superboy. This is a jewel mine, not a rest home for Legionnaires." So, and here's something interesting. They actually say up at the top here, Adventure Comics featuring Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes in the title indicia. Then it says starring Superboy, Mon-El, and Ultra Boy.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they must have been fan faves or something.
Yeah. Well, it's looking that way. I mean, it's the three most powerful dudes, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
All right, so we get inside this issue, and we see... Now Superboy's got the big rock hammer, and of course you can see the glowing around his little ankle leg iron there, and of course it is kryptonite.
Kryptonite.
Oh yeah. So watch out for flying debris. A gang of gorillas is out to overthrow the Earth's government. Where are those defenders of law and order, the Legionnaires? Why, they are the rebels. Interesting.
Rebel scum.
All that is, except the ones who have been arrested and put in irons. They're the Legion Chain Gang.
Chain Gang.
So we got Interestingly, we've got the Legionnaires back in their regular costumes on the bottom of the splash page. They decided their you know, laundry substitutes weren't good enough, so they went back to the old costumes. It's a shame, because actually Starboys look kind of cool. And Karate Kid has lost the monogram that he had on the, on the other ones, just in case. Yeah. He's always taking the grief. He's always taking the grief. So anyway, they're out there fighting, and Invisible Kid says, well, they're outnumbered, because without Superboy, Mon-El, and Ultra Boy beside us, this looks like our last fight.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they'll be okay. But actually, now we go back into the sewers, and we see them in those the regular costumes again. I guess that was just, in fact, for the splash page. So why are the Legionnaires, devout protectors of law and order in the 30th century, hiding in a dank, dark sewer beneath Metropolis, while the science police hunt them as criminals? Fugitives. And they've got the little sensor auto dog, robot dog.
If the handler of that sensor auto dog is a big snake, I am so out of here.
Awesome. Look at that thing.
Seriously. It's like K-9 from Doctor Who is making a guest appearance.
That's awesome. That makes it even cooler. So they come back, barbed wire around the headquarters. President Kandro, once still spelled wrong, Kandro Boltax, the new president of the UP, has convinced the High Council that the Legionnaires are they're basically outlaws. And so but of course, the Legionnaires, they can't stop being good. So they end up getting thrown on Tacron Galtos, and they're forbidden to wear their Legion costumes or to use their powers. They go to see R.J. Brand to see if he can help them, and he accuses them of trying to rob him and calls the cops. And
recap.
Last 3 pages of recap. Dang. So they're in the sewers. And Karate Kid does still have his monogram. So there they are in the sewers, and Starboy thinks that this was a real brainstorm because the lead pipes protect them from detection devices. There must be kryptonite hidden in there.
Always.
So Karate Kid says that the catacombs of Rome had nothing on this place. Invisible Kid says to him, you know, keep your voice down, Karate Kid. The echoes could lead the law right to us. So they have this maze of tunnels. It looks like an Escher painting in there.
Okay, so we need the fighter up front with the thief, you know, checking for traps. Put the ranger, you know, like with the mage. Yeah, the cleric can be in the back. That's good. Yeah, okay, let's go.
Nice. All right, and away we go. And
we all met in a bar, and now we're all bonded. Yay, okay.
Keep the torch in the back so the elf's ultra vision doesn't go out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
good point.
So off they go, but then Chameleon Boy trips, and when he falls, he hits a hidden switch, and a secret panel opens.
He pulls a Daphne. Look at that.
Yeah. Zoinks! Jinkies.
Jinkies.
So he says, the passage is still sloping upward. We must be nearing the surface. And they're walking through this tunnel, and they've been walking for half an hour. And they get up ahead, and there is a completely equipped scientific laboratory as opposed to the unscientific laboratories.
What's amazing about this is they walked in that tunnel for half an hour with no random encounters.
Exactly. Yeah. Who's DMing that?
Exactly. Not even an ogre or a goblin. Come on.
Don't they still have flames? Why are they walking like suckers? What's going on?
No, they took the flight rings.
Yeah, they were confiscated.
Yeah, police confiscated the flight rings.
You would have known had you not been so dismissive of the recap.
Recap. Why you gotta play him like that, Paul?
All right. All right. So they realize that this is, in fact, this lab. Judging by the building materials, this place was constructed in the mid-1900s. It can only mean one thing. It's one of Luthor's lairs. Sure, Superman's archenemy had several of these secret hideouts, in case you were wondering who Luthor was. And only a scientist as brilliant as he could have created the wonders like these in the 20th century. And Starboy says, I don't care whose it was. After spending a night in that cold, dank sewer tunnel, all I want is a nice, warm place to stretch out. And he's like, oh, there's a cot. I'm going to lay down there.
Yeah.
Starboy's off his meds. Look out.
Yeah. Exactly. Meanwhile, he doesn't realize that he could make some
Sloppy Joes
with the food synthesizer. Exactly. He says food synthesizers. The Invisible Kid finds these and makes a couple of sandwiches.
Nice.
And sandwich. Yeah. Oh, look at this machine in this mysterious lab that was once owned by a supervillain. I'm going to eat whatever comes out of this.
Hey, everybody's got to eat, even Luthor, man.
There you go. And a clothing machine that can instantly duplicate our Legion costumes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Luthor, he can't do everything.
He says, Luthor was a genius, all right. These costumes made by his machine are perfect in every detail.
In case I ever need to dress up with a Legion. Here we go.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. And it puts Lightlass out of work. I mean,
yeah, she can't sew a thing now. Jeez.
So he says, all right, group. Well, as we said,
they don't have the replicators on asteroids.
This is true. He says, all right, group, now that we're all rested and well fed, it's time to get to work. So he said, yes, our underground should start guerrilla warfare against the government. But first, we need more power. Our mightiest members are in prison, except for Supergirl, who totally abandoned us. And we have no equipment to contact her in the 20th century.
Hello, you're in Luthor's lab. You're telling me there's nothing in there that you can contact
exactly.
The path with? Don't cloud the issue with facts, Scott.
Granny says, so our next move is a jailbreak? He says, right. Cosmic Boy, Sunboy, Lightning Lad, and Duo Damsel are in the Metropolis jail. Here's my plan for springing them. And meanwhile, in the Earth's presidential palace, things are beginning to look up for the Legionnaires. They begin to look equally down for a man named Boltax. He says, blast, they should have been captured by now. Still, why worry? The influence will work on them soon, and then they'll be as helpless as the other sheep on this planet. He says, but I won't rest easy until they're all imprisoned or dead.
Not dead.
No.
And then he's contacted by Brujol, who is the warden on Takongaltos, calling with his daily report. And I love this. He says, Boltax, this is Brujol on Takongaltos with my daily report. And he said,
"Go on, fool.
Yeah, go on, fool." Yeah. Damn.
That's how I'm going to answer the phone from now on.
Go on, fool. I'm listening. It's something right out of Black Dynamite, I tell you.
Why are you calling and interrupting my kung fu?
All right, he says, I've converted the jail into... Hey, that just makes me think of Tyrock. Shut your mouth. That's right, I'm talking about Tyrock. All right, moving on. He says, I've converted the jail into a slave labor camp, as you ordered, with maximum security. No one can escape. Superboy's shackles are coated with kryptonite, his one weakness, in case you didn't know.
It's not his only weakness. Come on.
Well, a little lead paint keeps Mona...
most easily duplicatable weakness.
Yeah, because they're like, oh, well, his other weakness is magic, but we have no need for that in the 30th century. In the 30th century, it's all about Scott. There we go. So he says, and a little lead paint keeps Mon-El under control since his anti-lead serum wore off. They got him in, he's in the projects and he's eating the paint off the walls.
Doesn't he just die if he gets?
Yes, exactly.
I see.
But so not it, here. So,
and a special radioactive metal. We're not really sure what it happens to take care of Ultra Boy though.
We just made it up here. And it's very, very, very special.
It's fierce.
It's ultra, adamantium.
Ultra special. Ultramantium.
It's vanadium.
There you go. So he says, now, Boltax, about my pay. I told you, Brujol, you may have all the space jewels. Your prisoner's mine. He says, great. I'll take good care of my workers then. And he says, ha. Brujol's cruelty is only surpassed by his money lust. He'll never let the prisoners who mine the gems escape. Let's see, it's late and I have more checking to do. And
I have a feeling this president guy isn't a very nice dude.
Seriously. Uh-huh. And
getting a little tricky dick vibe off this dude.
Totally, totally.
Well, and it is 1967.
Indeed, so. Indeed. He opens up a secret panel that, you know, looks like some weird Art Deco painting. He says, if anyone suspected of the existence of this hidden room or of him who I keep prisoner here, my plot for absolute domination of the United Planets would be finished. I cannot destroy him.
Pinky, they're Pinky and the Brain.
And we kind of recognize him, don't we?
Mm. Yes, we do.
No.
He says, son, I'm here. Son, are you all right? Answer me, please. Answer me. What do you want of me, son? I've conquered a world, a universe for you. I don't want to keep you confined here, but I can't chance your ruining my life's dream.
Oh, no.
Yes. Eyes on the prize, baby.
Now he's angry. He says, of all the people on Earth, only we two are immune to the influence. Already it has bent everyone to my will, but soon the effect will be even greater. They will be my slaves, or our slaves, if you choose. Speak! Bah! My son, heir to my power, a weakling. And he slams the door, and his son gets up and says, good, he's gone.
Oh, no.
See, that's the one thing missing in the Star Trek universe. You really can't slam one of those automatic doors when you leave.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not... yeah, exactly. It's... I think they're using a little license here, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, there's a button you can push and it just makes the door sliding sound effect. It's an MP3.
Yeah, oh, that's
exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. Exactly. So he says, I can get my sliver from its hiding place. Mustn't drop it. This little scrap of metal is the only tool I have. And he takes to unscrewing the bolts on the heating vent, and that's all he has to work with. And it may take him days to do so, but he has to escape and warn the Legion before the influence gets them. Influence.
After the influence.
All right, so we got Legionnaires. They walk out of the HQ, and it turns out it's in Mount Metro outside the city. So he says, so that's why the passage up here was so long. Luthor's lair is in Mount Metro outside the city. Enough geography. We have a jail to crack tonight. quit your learning. And he says, before our pals are moved to another prison. So they get in front of the jail, and clearly they've never done a prison break before because they haven't got their faces all blacked out or wearing the balaclavas. Exactly. So they said, remember this plan. Keep out of sight of the guards. Good thing we're not wearing colorful costumes of any kind.
You think?
And so Violet says, it's after curfew, so nobody else will be out. Meanwhile, via walkie-talkie, Lyle is getting a message from Chameleon Boy. But where is Chameleon Boy? Ah, well, he's inside the prison, and he is disguising himself as the deputy warden. And he says that he's found the warden's files. Cosmic Boy, Lightning Lad, and Sun Boy are in cell block 10 on the east side, and Duo Damsel is in the women's section on the north. So they commence plan. They've got to commence Plan G. Plan G.
So Plan A through F are totally screwed. At
they're useless to us. They're useless to us. And it turns out Plan F was really just trying to do that whole that whole Shawshank Redemption thing. So they sent the poster of Rita Hayworth, and it's like, well, that might be taking a bit too long. So he says, okay, kid, that's our cue. And he says, right. As head of the espionage squad, CB, meaning Chameleon Boy, gives the orders now. Like, yeah, so CB, tell us, what's the deal, CB? And he says, so the plan, the key to our whole plan is getting through this gate, and those guards mustn't sound the alarm. So Invisible Kid goes all invisible, and he says, there's only one thing to do. Karate Kid and I are the only ones to do it. We must not fail.
Da-da-da-da.
So he makes a noise to distract their attention, and
Karate
makes with the judo chop chop and takes
Hong Kong fooey them.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So it's all Karate Kid's
Kid all the time.
Exactly. He says, these powerful Durlamite gates will be tough, but I think I can karate them. By which you mean super karate them. But of course, that's the only kind he knows.
That's obviously way ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now he says, you must. Like we that. Sure can't send for Superboy. So he you know, apparently there is no distraction, so he doesn't hurt his hand, and he breaks through it. So everyone follows him in, and the guards sound the alarm because Legionnaires are attacking, and so Invisible Kid says, our first objective, take that tower. And in they go.
Karate.
Ooh.
And yeah, he grabs himself a blaster, and he you know, takes out one of the he's taking out the spotlights. And they're calling for reinforcements, but he shoots the lights out, and he says, we can't let them escape in the darkness. Use the gate lights. Keep them pinpointed and blinded. And so basically they get the big beacons, and it is turned to play on the Legionnaires. That's okay, because there are other Legionnaires sneaking away a little bit further. So, yes, you know, the you know, Bouncing Boy and Karate Kid, I can't tell who that is.
I think that's Invisible Kid and Violet.
Oh, okay, and Bouncing Boy, yeah. They're under the spotlight, but that's okay, because in the meantime, you know, Phantom Girl and Starboy are making their escape, and they say, according to Chameleon Boy's directions, Cosmic Boy, Lightning Lad, and Sun Boy are in specially constructed cells behind this wall. And so they're looking for the women's wing. And so Phantom Girl says, I'll spring duo, damsel. And of course, there is no obstacle to her that she can't just walk through. So she goes through the wall, and she finds Duo Damsel's cell and gets in there and says, shh, don't set off the electric alarms. This powerful acid Brainiac 5 gave me will dissolve your bars. So they
set off the alarms at all.
And then meanwhile, Starboy is making the wall super heavy so it falls off the side. And it
but that won't set off the alarms either.
No. And apparently, good thing that's not a load-bearing wall. So, yes, Legionnaires are holed up in the central tower, and they can't get them out. And so yes, the captain seems to have taken after the new president of Earth. He says, "Fool, I can automatically repair the lights and seal off the tower and flood it with gas," which he does.
Gas, no.
And yeah, so kid. Okay. All the doors and windows are locked, and gas is pouring from every air duct. And Invisible Kid says, choke! Looks like we've had it, groups.
Take a drink. We haven't had a choke in a
Seriously.
While.
Seriously.
I haven't had a drink this episode either. It's crazy.
All right, so Sunboy, Cosmic Boy, hold off the guards. I'm going to blast that tower apart with my lightning bolts. And he lets forth some pretty awesome lightning.
Achoo!
All right, so... sparks from Lightning Lad's bolts short out the generator, so the lights are out again. Why didn't they think of that before? And away they go. They're getting away. And outside the prison, Invisible Kid says, we made it, but we'd better get out of this area fast. They'll be after us in no time. Wait, where's Chameleon Boy? And he flies in, but how? He says, our flight rings, Invisible Kid. They were in the warden's safe, and I figured we needed them more than he did.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. So
got the jewelry back.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, everyone's pleased. You know, now we can fly to safely. So they get back to their new HQ.
You know, Paul, that reminds me. I want my flight ring.
Seriously.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway.
Because my other one's in the shop and it's good.
Exactly. So he says, man, that was perfect. It went off like clockwork. Face it, we're born prison breakers. Next we'll spring Superboy and the others from Takangaltos, right, kid? Wrong.
Yeah.
And Invisible Kid says, wrong. And I'm thinking, wrong? What the? He says, but I can't just stand here while Ultra Boy rots in jail, says Phantom Girl. And, of course, Duo Damsel is, and Superboy. And Lightning Lad says, and my sister Light Lass. And Saturn Girl.
Oh, and I guess Saturn
Girl. Yeah, well, I guess we know who's shagging up with who. Okay, after that conversation.
All right, that's the move the police will expect. Our main task is to find out how the mind of everyone on this planet is being controlled. And so Chameleon Boy says, a job for the espionage squad. So I take over as leader again. And I think he's going to invoke this espionage squad stuff very frequently then. And yes, he's got a plan. He says, okay, listen. Off we go to part two, entitled The Legion Spies. So it is the next day, and this is like any good heist film where we don't, you know, we know that there's a plan going on, but this is the part that's going to unfold, and you know, good plan's going to come together, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, Hannibal.
Hey, was Hannibal's last name Smith?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I thought I was going crazy, but it was all right.
Well, you are, but, you know, correct about this answer.
It would have been a totally different show if his last name had been Lecter.
Fool, I ain't getting on no airplane. Hannibal, why are you eating my leg?
Hannibal the cannibal. Oh, no.
All right. So, yes, the president is in there. He says, "What's all the commotion by the gate?" "A courier, sir. She claims to have an important message for you, but she lacks proper credentials." And here we go. Hubris. Hubris. He says, "One girl, let her in." So the one girl comes in. She says, "An important message from the representative of Grax." "Important? Ha! What can that old windbag have to say to me? Tell him I'll let his message age a little before I read it."
Jerk.
Yeah.
Best president ever.
Yeah, that's more like the kind of government we're used to, right? As it turns out, this envelope with the message in it, it turns out that the courier was Duodamsel, and the letter contained shrinking violets. Ooh. So she gets out of the envelope. And you know, the president's all important. The only thing of importance is my plan to make everyone on Earth my willing slave.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah.
Chinkies.
He's indoctrinating everyone. He says, and as the courier walks down the hall toward the exit, yes, she splits into two. The one's going to leave so that no one will suspect, but the other will sneak into the president's office. And so away she goes, and she's going to go into, she says, "There goes my other self. Now that the guards think I'm gone, I'll crack Boltax's safe with this special tool Brainiac 5 gave me and look for clues."
Is that a pipe wrench?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. She says, being Duodamsel has its advantages. Yes.
Yeah.
One-third less many advantages as...
Aww, leave her alone.
Come on. I mean, isn't she going to say, "I sure missed that extra body I had"? That would have made it even more...
No, Chuck is going to say that. So.
Oh, yeah. All right. So outside, Lightning Lad is in disguise, strolling by the palace grounds, and not a particularly good disguise because, you know, he's still got, like, the cape on and everything. So he zaps the gardener robots, and that begins the next phase. The robots collapse, and the guards say, "We need to call a handyman." The robot repairman comes up. He says, "You called for some robot repairman, Mac?"
Buddy,
he says, "Right, our gardener robots collapsed. Go take a look at them." "Wait a minute, you two. What's in that box?" He says, "Just tools and spare parts, see?" He says, "Okay, just hurry with those robots." "Good, they didn't recognize Karate Kid because he..." Karate Kid? Did he
chop anybody's head off?
Yeah, who is it that has the wicked porn stash in that picture?
What?
Oh, it's Chameleon Boy. He's
Floyd Lawton going on there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, this is true. It's a porn stash.
Hey. Porn stash.
All right.
Robot repairman, man.
Yeah.
What? I don't need a robot repaired, or do I?
Or do I?
All right. So,
Candy Graham.
So, Invisible Kid, now all we can do is hope for results. Meanwhile, Violet has been literally on the president's back for hours, hoping to discover how he's controlling everyone. But so far, he's only done routine paperwork. But then he seems to take a break, and she's, what's up now?
Routine paperwork.
Yep.
Yawn.
And he heads toward a blank wall, and she says, "There must be a hidden door." Meanwhile, Duodamsel is looking in his papers, and she can't find any clues. And he says, I must visit my son. Eh? Someone in my outer office? And so she ducks through the air passage into the next room, and he says, you, stop. And Vi says, the heat's on. Time for me to leave through a window. She's like, cheese it, it's the cops.
Jig is up.
So she gets out there and she says, boys, I've been seen. Let's get moving. Boltax has ordered the guard out. So they put her in the box. You see, it was
and another reason why along. Chuck loves her so much.
Oh, my. So they say, well, we have to take some of these units back to the shop. Can we go? He says, well, nobody is supposed to leave the grounds, but I guess you're all right. So one of the other guards says, guards, fools, why did you let them out? They're legionnaires. After them. Quick, the truck. And off they go, and they're in the robot maintenance ship, and they've got these ships chasing them, zapping at them. And they're gaining Brainiac 5 faster. I can't. We're sunk unless our pals show up in time. And
luckily.
Yes, fortunately, yeah. Yes, that's exactly what they do. And Cosmic Boy and Star Boy, are basically magnetize up the ships and make them too heavy to fly. And they've helped out. Yes, they've helped save the day. And afterwards, you've got them all sort of sitting around moping. And, well, group, we had our chance and we flubbed it. And the lad says, you said it. They'll be ready for us now. And Karate Kid says, will we ever find out how Boltax is influencing people? And Invisible Kid says, we've been approaching this the wrong way. Let's try a little logic.
What? Sure. Think about a problem?
Get that's why. Here. That's madness. He says, sure, Boltax obviously used something everyone on Earth had to come into contact with. I wonder what that could be. Like air, which everyone breathes, or high-frequency communication waves, which span all parts of the globe, or food, or water. No one can live without it.
Starbucks.
If a chemical were put in
Starbucks.
It.
Starbucks.
Yeah. And or the colonel with his wee beady eyes. No, but he says, Boltax's first project was a worldwide water plant. Let's get a sample of that water. And they realize, yes, there are traces of hypnochemicals in the water. Weak, but effective over a period of time.
They've been hypnotized.
Hit me. He says, Boltax probably wanted to make it hard to detect. And he says, but haven't we been here long enough to be affected? Or we haven't been here long enough to be affected, yes. And he says, I've made an antidote. The one drop of this will counteract gallons of Boltax's formula. That's handy.
Hey.
And he
not
says,
like these billions and billions of gallons of stuff they had to use to put up the sun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he says, and it's faster working. So they say, okay, we'll head for the main reservoir tomorrow and pour it in. So they show up at the purification plant the next day. Same as the jail. First a diversion and then, kid, look, it's Boltax. He must be here for an inspection tour. And so you got a bunch of guards there. And he says, guards or no guards, we gotta get in there. They say, President Boltax, we're under attack. It's the Legion. Fire. Wipe them out. And he says, okay. So basically, not only do they have to take on Boltax's guards, but the water plant guards as well. Yes, they're in for it now.
They're bumper cars.
Yeah, exactly. So
karate in that car. Look at that.
Meanwhile.
Yeah, that car can't stand up to karate.
Why do all the cars have a little Shrek antenna there? What's wrong with that?
It's because they're bumper cars.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see.
Yeah, exactly. That's
the electric grid.
Exactly.
I get it.
So he says, good, the others have drawn the guards away. Now I can pour my antidote into the water supply.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, what bad luck. It turns out one of the guards had left his weapon behind, and the
guy caught shows up. Like Homer Pyle. Oh,
yeah,
no.
Exactly. He just went to get it, and he's like, Shazam, it's an intruder. So he's pouring in the...
Why?
Exactly. He's pouring in the antidote, and he says, my antidote is more powerful than Boltax's chemical. It's absorbed right through the skin and takes only moments to work. So, in silhouette, he gets slugged by that guard.
The foreign object.
Exactly. But someone sees him getting slugged. But meanwhile, outside, you've got, you know, Phantom Girl is being missed by stuff, which is great. You know, but she's here she says, I've made my body immaterial so the weapons don't hurt me. But, you know, she's got a solid fist.
Yeah.
And
hey now.
Easy. So Jet Car's in the motorcade shedding their disguises. They're really small tanks. Ah, that's why they look so boxy.
Oh, tricky.
Mm. Yeah, so Boltax was prepared for an attack. Look out. And Starboy gets hit. He's injured. But but meanwhile, Karate Kid, he's all about using the super karate on it. And he's just trying to crush me. Now, well, you picked the wrong target. This time you've had it.
Right.
Mm.
You best step back off, Karate Kid.
Yeah. So meanwhile, back on attack on Galtos, you've got the guards there. You've got Mon-El carrying a load of stuff, and you've got Element Lad swinging the hammer. And
it looks like they're playing croquet.
It does, kind of. And
balls there.
And Matterier Lad, you know, he's kind of been taking it easy, but he says, check out, and Lad, iron chains are like chocolate cake to an appetite like mine. Why did I never think of that before?
Nom, nom, nom.
Exactly. And he says, and my element-changing power is turning my shackles to neon gas. And so then he turns Superboy's, Mon-El's, and Ultra Boy's chains to harmless tin.
Why not just turn that into gas too? Wouldn't that be easier? Save you that extra step.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I think it's to show us just how many different things matter can exist in.
Right.
Anyway, so Brujol comes over, sees the commotion, says, "Oh, the Legionnaires are loose. I must hide quickly."
This is awesome. Did you see that? How the shadow of Colossal Bit hand is coming down in that.
You're right. That's awesome. It's fantastic. It's a nice touch.
What the hell's going on there? Oh, I get it.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Well, take a drink. There's an arrow in my comic book.
But I mean, honestly, for this page, I want to pass because that is cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's a total cool thing with the shadow. I just don't know why the arrows are necessary. So,
yeah. But well, whatever. I guess it was new. I guess that kind of layout was newer at the time. We're so new used to it time, because it's been so commonly done. Okay, so Starboy's injured. The rest are falling back. What can we do? Take Boltax. I see him on that observation platform. And so some boy creates a diversion. He blinds a bunch of people with his super brilliance and says the effect is only temporary, but it should do the job. So they grab hold of Boltax and say, yeah, gotcha. And and some boy says, quick, the guards are already recovering from my solar burst. All right, Boltax, what are you meant to surrender or else? And he says, bah, you know as well as I do that you won't kill anyone, Legionnaires. Men, get them. He says, let's free President Boltax. We're outnumbered, but where is Brainiac 5? He's failed us.
No, not Brainiac 5.
No. Not again.
Says, you Legionnaires will pay for attacking President Boltax. Death to the Legion. Free Boltax.
Four more years.
Suddenly, far above, one of the plant's huge water tanks explodes, raining tons of liquid down upon the advancing guards. And he says, Brainiac 5 came through. His antidote with water will free the guards from Boltax's influence. They don't have to drink it. The stuff will be instantly absorbed through their pores. We're safe.
Wet t-shirt contest.
Yeah.
On your bow bow.
All right, so, but are they really? Yes. Mm. And he says, the guards are still advancing, but the antidote should have worked by now. What's happening to Brainiac 5? Or what's happened to Brainiac 5? Well, what happened? Ah, yes. Remember, he got slugged. And he remembers being clobbered before he could put the antidote in the water. Now it's gone. I must have spilled it when I fell. Yeah. So, but what's that hubbub outside? There's a hubbub.
Hubbub.
And they get out there and when the guards are aiming their weapons, he says, even we can't stop so many. And Boltax says, get them, my loyal guards. Kill them. Says, Boltax, you controlled our minds. You're the enemy here. They're grabbing Boltax. Then Brainiac 5's antidote did work. Yes, he says, good old Brain. Phantom Girl says, good old Brainy. He saved our skins. He says, but I didn't do it. I've been unconscious all this time. I was slugged. It's Brainiac 5, but if you didn't, and it turns out he gets the eye to the cosmic boy.
It's his eye. Deus Ex Machina lad.
You say, I showed up earlier in the book. He says, I found Brainiac 5's antidote and poured it in the water. Then I blew up the water tanks above those guards. He says, gasp, it's Rond Vidar, Universo's son. And if you haven't guessed by now, Kandril Boltax is really Universo, and they unmask him. And here it is.
He would have got away with it, too.
Here it is. Bah, if not for that goody-goody brat, I'd have won. I would have got away from it, too, if it was a few meddling kids.
Oh, boy. Come on, Scoob, we're going to go down the luau.
And, of course, they remind us that the Legion battled Universo in Adventure 349. Right. Says, yes, he used his hypnotic ability to escape from prison. Then, in a new bid for power, he kidnapped Vice President Boltax and took his place. He hypnotized others into setting up the emergencies that kept you away from Earth while he arranged the accident that killed the president. He says those hyperhelium balloons that hypnotized Battlecruiser... those hyperhelium bombs that hypnotized Battlecruiser Captain is firing will cause this sun to flare up and threaten to engulf its planets. A legionnaire is... Or what? What?
That should bring Legion here.
That should bring the Legion here. There we go. All right. Mm-hmm. Says, as Boltax, he succeeded to the presidency. His first act was to build this plant and to place a hypnotic drug in the water it processed. With everyone under his control, he outlawed you, his worst foes, and imprisoned me because I had inherited his immunity to hypnosis.
Ooh. Cool.
He says, if I were free, I'd tip you off before you fell under the hypnochemical's control. He says, we found out about it ourselves. And he says, anyway, I escaped and came here to sabotage the plant, and I did it. So, good thing, too. And he says, better than you think. In time, the hypno drug would have robbed all the people of Earth of all their wills, making them mindless slaves.
And just then, like then the television.
Exactly. Then the curfew and other laws were passed to test the people's will for resistance.
Right, I get it.
So they realize, you know, basically, hey, Brainiac 5's antidote is being pumped all over the world, freeing everyone's mind. But Ron says, and Universo, my father, is going back to prison.
Sigh.
He said, well,
Pop's Day sucks.
So later, the real President Boltax has put the Legion back in business, and they're glad to see that Projectra has recovered in a hurry. from her injury.
Just in time,
of course.
It's better than the alternative.
Exactly. Yes, because otherwise she'd have been in a coma for a very long time.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, so he says, next we must free our pals from prison on Tacon Galtos. And they say, don't bother, kid, we're free. Superboy, Mon-El, the others.
And the rest.
Yeah, exactly. he said, We broke loose, leader man. Brujol and his guards are in the hands of the science police. And Lyle says, fine, now I propose that we confer honorary membership on the lad who has twice, through his courageous acts, saved the Legion and Earth. Rond Vidar, all in favor say aye, and the ayes have it.
Aye!
Yeah, exactly. That means they're going to teleport somewhere, I think.
Yay, Rond Vidar. Woohoo.
So there you go. Honorary membership goes to Rond Vidar.
As well it should.
That's a nice outfit he's got there.
For sending his daddy off to jail for the second time.
Exactly.
Not the last.
No, not
what color is Rond Vidar's outfit there, Darren?
Purple.
It is a purple, yes.
That figures. Okay. Yeah.
It's usually a purple or some kind of lavender black combo.
Yeah.
Right.
Some variation of purple, though. Purple and black, so.
But so yeah, a fairly significant story. I mean, that's a character that didn't get used for really that well for several years. And then got brought back into something real cool.
He comes back at a really pivotal time. So, hey, it's all good. It's all good.
Exactly. So,
yeah, and this story is very reminiscent of the Universal Project.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very much so, yeah.
Well, I mean, this was Universo's MO. I mean, this is what he did. He subverted the government to take over the world. And he learned that, you know, well, the Legion's going to try to stop him every time. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So but you're right.
He's always smart,
getting smarter and smarter about it. So, you know, I'll get those Legionnaires one day.
See, and Universe was interesting, right? Because he did come off as very cartoonish until really the Universo project. And then it was like, yeah, the guy's stone cold evil.
Yeah.
And but then even more so in Legion of Three Worlds, I loved how evil he was in that. And the fact that, you know, it didn't matter to him that it was his son. It's like, yeah, you know, that's too bad that that stuff has happened to him. But, you know, I want my Green Lantern ring back, basically. And so
it's kind of the Sinestro of the 30th century in a way.
Really. Very much so. He's even got the look for it, you know.
Yeah.
So there
very
we go.
Very Snidely Whiplash.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, he's twirling that mustache and saying, and we had that Scooby moment in there, and
classic Scooby moment.
Yeah,
totally. Grab the snacks, kids.
Yeah.
When did Scooby Doo debut?
I think 68 or 70.
So I was gonna say this was right around.
Yeah, but there were a whole bunch of shows like Scooby. I mean, honestly, so
right. But I mean, that was such a Scooby Doo moment. Yeah.
Oh, totally.
So maybe it was a reference.
Let's check the Encyclopedia of the Internet, which would be Wikipedia.
1969,
dude.
But there's got to be some kind of they had tons of those
types
of cartoons where gang of kids would, you know, stop an evildoer. I mean, Scooby's the most famous, but you know.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is such a moment, but that moment was probably referencing something else.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the idea of
be
having
it like
kind of
Nancy
moment.
Drew or you know the Hardy.
Exactly. Well, it's very much sort of the parlor the parlor mystery thing where it's like, you know, I know who it is and I will reveal it to you after, but first.
And they're in the room right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I brought you all here to tell you who the murderer is.
It's me. Oh.
Oh, sorry.
Perhaps that could have been more dramatic.
Nah, it's okay. It's okay.
So.
Pop some.
So there we have it. Wait, let me check the magical little box of mail.
The thingy with the things within the things. You thing rings do your thing.
Ah, yes. God. You know, that was, oh, man.
Oh, they're saying, on Wikipedia, they're saying a show called I Love a Mystery and Dobie Gillis were the inspiration. So I'm going to look up I Love a Mystery because I've seen Dobie Gillis and I don't think that's exactly.
Fred is very Dobie Gillis.
Fred is, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It was a radio drama series about three friends who ran a detective agency and traveled the world in search of adventure. Well, there you go.
All right, I think
spectacular.
It's just a radio serial, but you know they, you know,
serial.
Mm-hmm. Serial.
I like cereal.
All right, so there we have it. That takes us through that, and I think we'll. Anyone got anything else to add?
No,
there isn't much of news until, of course, Wednesday.
Yes.
If you're listening to this as it came out on Monday, you already know that. Yes, Wednesday.
Right. Go to the store, people. Ugh. Go to the store. Show up in droves. Exactly. Read it in the parking lot.
Oh, I know I will. So comments, as always, are welcome at Legion of Substitute Heroes. Oh, God.
Substitutepodcasters.com.
Yeah, you know, there was that choke scene, and I took my drink for it, and it just knocked me for a loop. All right, so... There are, yes, the email address, the correct email address is legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. You can also join us on the forum. That is forum.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. Or you can head on over to our website. That is, of course, legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. And you can leave comments on the episode threads there. We are on the Twitter. It is LOSP Podcast. We are on the Facebook. And that is under, just look for Legion of Substitute Podcasters. It's us, and there's kind of some neat conversation going on there as well.
Yeah.
And including one about a little discussion about the old Coleco games that Scott Koblish was Scott Koblish. See?
Oh, you did it.
But he said he liked that version of it, so it's all it's all good, Scott. You see? I'm just taking care of you.
We should thank everybody who sat down and talked with us over the past month.
Oh, seriously. It has been awesome. All of We've them. Been very lucky.
It was great.
Yeah.
And so, yes, with that, we are going to make our way into the time bubble and head back to the 21st century, and we will see you all next week.
Taboo.